Hogstein.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. It is Alex, Steve, and Dave. Dave is in a haunted house right now because his lights keep flickering. Steve is in a less haunted house, but he is in Texas, so there's probably ghosts and other things like lurking about anyway, because, you know, Texas is a weird place.
Texas is a great place. I encourage everybody. No, I don't. Please stay away from Texas. Don't ruin Texas. So we
ghosts
we
everywhere,
don't want
Steve.
You.
Ghosts everywhere.
I don't. The ghosts are fine. I'm talking about like voters and don't move here. You know, we're fine where we are. Stay where you are, please.
Isn't like the Austin area kind of like the hotbed area where people seem to be going to?
It is one.
Austin is the hippie liberal area of Texas. It's like the California of Texas. So we don't really count Austin as actual Texas. It's its own little universe. It's like a sea of leftism in a like a big giant pot of rightism, you know, conservatism.
Aren't you afraid that's going to eventually start crawling its way out?
No, everybody knows what Austin's been like that for a generation. Yeah.
Gotcha.
If not more, honestly.
It's always been, but it's gotten a bit psycho now. I mean, they've gone like the country has. I mean, they've gone kind of off the deep end. You know, it's just the sign of the times.
Everywhere is going off the deep end on all political fronts. It's honestly, working in politics is awful.
Yeah.
Oh, clearly I'm a conservative. Everybody knows that. But I hate all politicians, just for the record. I think they're all total slime balls.
Yes. Yes. And you and I have to deal with them probably more than a lot of people.
Yes.
Given what we do for a living.
Yeah.
So.
They're slime balls. Except the people I directly report to, you're not a slime ball. You know?
They are all fantastic people.
If I report to anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I had just gotten to a point to where it was like just trying to keep up with what's true, what's not, having to read this article and that article, and then trying to push away some of the legacy media and way they try to drive their narrative, and then trying to find it's just I got to the point I just
now, are you talking
I
about
gave up.
Politics or sports at this point, because that kind of segues into where we are in the draft season.
I tell you what, the politics have been like that for a while. Sports is quickly becoming that.
Do you want to hear the funniest commercial I've seen? So this is a Donald Trump commercial, and I don't mean it. I'm not trying to encourage anybody to vote or not vote for him. That's not my point. It's just a really hilarious. Donald Trump is funny. You got to admit, you may hate him. You may love him. He's a funny dude. So I saw a commercial that it was an eclipse thing, and he had scenes of people, you know, staring in the sky, you know, excited with glasses on. And then Donald Trump's head comes up and blocks out the sun. Not the moon, but a giant, like a profile of Trump's head, like disembodied head, blocks the sun. That you got to admit, that's funny. Regardless of who you want to vote for, it's fine with me. That is a funny commercial.
So actually, when it comes to eclipse, like I may have one better for you, though.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I came home that day, the wife and I were going to sit there, watch the eclipse, had the glasses, all that good stuff. It got cloudy. Sure. In and out, all that good stuff, whatever. And so I'm sitting there, and we get a good glimpse as we're looking at it. My wife was using her glasses to get pictures through it. She was actually getting some good pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when me looking up and with me having the type of bald head that I have right now, she took a picture of my head, and it literally looked like, you know, you saw the hair was the sun, the bald part was the moon. And she goes, "Look, girls," to our dog. "I got a picture of the eclipse." "Oh, no, wait, that's your dad. Never mind."
That's fantastic.
Dude, I was in tears when she showed that to me. I was
now,
like,
now you need to
that
post
one.
That on social somewhere so we can all enjoy it. That's a 10.
I unfortunately, all I saw of an eclipse was slightly darkened sky from an office room in the middle of a meeting. Right. And I turned around and looked out a window and it seemed a bit dark. And that was all I saw.
I got out and I was actually able to look out an office window in our building and see it very easily, which was nice.
It was also cloudy in Houston, so I mean, we wouldn't see anything anyway.
I walked onto the mall since you guys know I work right next to the National Mall. So, like, I was like, I'm going to take 10 minutes, just go out and check it out.
I would have, but I was in the middle of something. Yeah. I couldn't anyway, but it was cloudy regardless.
But we had
Texas.
That one the full eclipse in D.C. in 2017 when, of course, Trump looked directly at it without glasses because he is the dumbest man on the planet. And I will be political and say he's mildly autistic. So looking at an eclipse,
I don't agree with that. I mean, he's a narcissistic. He's certainly not autistic. Narcissist.
All right. Let's
there you go, guys. Enjoy the photo.
Oh, did you send it?
Oh, you sent it to us?
Yes.
Because the audience is going to care about what you're texting us.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Okay, but you guys can have fun to narrate.
Oh, yeah, we will definitely do that. Well, we're doing this, although it is lying season, as I briefly mentioned. Everyone has sources telling everybody that they know what's going to happen with that number two pick, right? Everyone knows that their guy is telling them it's going to be XYZ person. So, like, if you are following Schefter, if you're following anyone on social media, it's just nuts.
I thought you were asking a question.
No. I'm just stating something. None of these people know. Can we just admit, especially like the guys who call themselves NFL insiders on Twitter who don't work for like a network, or they're us. They're just guys like us. We don't
even know. The ones who work on a network don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
No. Okay. They have at least an
Mel Kiper has been wrong more than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how Mel Kiper has a job, to be honest. I could get up there and do what he does.
Mel Kiper has a job because he was the first one to come up with it.
Yes.
Right.
I think any of us on this show, we've been doing this long enough, we could get up there and sound like that.
Oh, of course. But, Steve, you don't have the awesome Mel Kiper hair.
Thank God. Thank God. Or the ego.
Or
Talk about ego. That guy's
got... Or the
got,
chin.
Yes.
Yeah.
That guy's got more ego than even, you know, name your politician. Mel Kiper's got more ego than he does.
Yeah. And you know, very nice suits. I'll give him the suits. The suits are nice. He can dress well. Good for him.
But he's made all kinds of like who was it, the quarterback he said he was going to retire if he was wrong about and
Jimmy,
he was wrong.
Jimmy Clausen.
There you go. It was Jimmy Clausen.
Right. Jimmy Clausen.
You were way wrong about
so many quarterbacks though. Let's be honest.
But he said he was going to retire if Jimmy Clausen didn't make it or something like that. And
right.
Jimmy Clausen is a horrible, miserable failure. Like we all knew he was going to be. And Mel Kiper said nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, he's still there. But Kiper, to his credit, I don't think ever claims he has inside info. When he
no, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Well,
a lot
you know
of these
when
people
I
get, out there are.
I gained appreciation for Mel Kiper when Todd McShay came on board. Who, you want to talk about the definition of arrogance, narcissism, and the guy who thinks that he is smarter than everybody, to include God himself? That's the guy.
Are you talking about Steve or me? I don't know.
Well, speaking of better than everyone else, am I the only one that won money in our March Madness pool?
I didn't win any money, so yeah, I think in our group probably.
I got $135. Thank you very much. Out of the March Madness office pool.
I had a perfect bracket.
No, you didn't.
Absolutely, I did. I got nothing wrong.
You didn't
absolutely
do one.
Absolutely nothing wrong. You're correct. I didn't do one.
Right. So you got nothing wrong. I get it. Yeah. I actually, Steve, between that and your free lunch you got for the Taylor Swift bet you made.
Oh, I know.
You're having a good year, man.
And by the way, that was the same office that got me as the Taylor Swift lunch. This was the same person who was organizing an office pool. So she had to pay me again.
Nice.
If Steve keeps this up, this woman is going to owe him like a house by the end of the year.
Yeah, I know. We're going to up the bet to like a car.
Yeah. I mean, so other than it being a kind of quiet time in the league, we did write, you guys wrote some good articles on our blog. Steve, you have one about Jonathan Allen. But Dave wrote an interesting one that really pertains to what's coming up, and that is Adam Peters' draft history.
Yes.
So, Dave, why don't you kind of take us through some of the stuff you learned from, you know, reaching back and looking at the past drafts of Adam Peters?
Well,
and what did you glean from them?
Well, before we kind of delve into picks wise or even the decisions that were made along the way. I didn't count the 2016 year because he was only a assistant director of scouting or whatnot. He didn't have a great influence that year. So I really kind of focused more so on the numbers I have right now that are not in the article from 2017 up until now. Now, as far as the year, as far as the 2022 and 2023 draft class, I didn't really count them in any kind of calculus because we have no idea what those players are going to end up being, whether they start off with slow and they wind up breaking out or whatever. So I didn't even really talk much about them in terms of what I have for numbers. But when I go from 2017 to 2021, and I included the deal with McCaffrey in the all during the season and the deal with Chase Young last year, that's 34 total trades that accounted for with draft picks. And if you want details of any of them, I have them all right here.
Hold on. Wait. Hold on. He did not make 34 trades.
No. I'm talking, from 2017 up until 2023.
He didn't make 34 trades in 6 years.
There were a total of 34 moves that were made from going into the draft and also during the season. I include every trade that was made for draft picks.
Okay, you're not counting just draft day trades because there's
not
no
just
way that
draft
happens.
Day. No. I'm encompassing the whole season.
Okay, fair enough.
And I actually have them broken down on what was pre-draft and during the season here as well in more detail. But
what I thought was most interesting about this, so maybe you can go through this. The let's just hear about what was drafted from 2000, what the 49ers drafted from 2017 to 2022 that he was a part of at some level, because I think it's insightful. Right. So you want to go through that?
Okay. But just real quick, though.
Okay.
Of those 34 moves total, encompassing everything, about 12 of them you could scratch off of being bad deals, like the Trey Lance one and so forth. That was about 30. So that was a 35% of those moves that turned out being bad. 35% were neither way. Only 29%, 10 total deals actually turned out to be productive trades. So, but as far as that, we could start with 2017 if you like.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I will say I do think it's insightful that Peters is that active in terms of trading around, like.
Let's also kind of be clear. I kind of made this in the article, because in that time he was director of scouting and assistant general manager. He had influence. How much influence he had, we're not sure, because the final decision was through John Lynch.
Right.
And of course, with Kyle Shanahan. And like when it came to the, trade for Trey Lance, there was an article that I had shared in a previous article that stated that decision was solely Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to make that move to go up for Trey Lance.
I don't believe now, that for a second, by the way.
But. Now, that's the thing, though, in terms of the final decision.
Well, sure.
What did Adam Peters play in all that? We have no idea. Was he against it? That's the only thing we can speculate. We have no idea what his role was. So I just made it to where I accounted him as being a major part of all these moves, because that's all we have to go on to going forward.
Right.
So far as 2017,
Dave's adjusting real quick to try and read his paper there.
You could go to the website and it would be a lot easier to read. I'm just saying.
Well, I know that.
Because it's published.
Yeah.
Am
I
going
to have to
off.
Do it for you?
No, because I had the website up. I was trying to get something else on top of all that squared away as well, but the lights, I had the wrong lights on for that.
Okay, so lucky you had lights on, period, considering your house has been flickering for 30 minutes.
Yes, that is true. So So as far as a 2017 draft, they had one significant move in there where they swapped back with Chicago, and they went from pick 2 to pick 3, and they picked up an additional third round pick, a fourth round pick, and a 2018 third round pick, and that turned into Solomon Thomas, which he wound up only being on the team for 4 seasons, wasn't overly productive, so you can kind of cross him off as being more of a bust in that draft when it came out. But as far as that trade, though, that trade ended up, obviously, Bears getting Mitchell Trubisky. But what was interesting is that third round pick that they wound up getting, they moved to the Saints, and the Saints used that for Alvin Kamara, which wound up being pretty interesting. Not to say they would have drafted him, but it's those kind of ripple effects that you'll notice in some of these trades on players they missed out on, like Micah Parsons. Later on, we can show on one trade that they made, they missed out on Micah Parsons because the Dolphins moved that pick to the Cowboys, where they could have been sitting there for Micah Parsons.
Yeah, okay, but like it. So, 2017, Solomon Thomas, bust. Reuben Foster, bust.
Yes.
They found George Kittle.
Right.
You know, which is, you were the only real kind of plus level player, I think, that they had. So what I'm taking out of 2017 is that all is not well.
Well, they also had Fred Warner in the third round in 2017.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You didn't list that one here, but that's 2018, is it not?
No.
Dave, that's what you have it listed as, at least.
Somebody play the Jeopardy theme.
Yeah, Dave is looking through his own notes again.
Okay, it's 2018.
Yeah, 2018. I had it wrong on my one paper here. My bad. My apologies. So, yes, that was 2018.
So I would consider overall, that's not a good draft.
No.
You know, you made a trade. You know, the big trade was a bust. Reuben Foster, train wreck. You found George Kittle. That's all that happened.
Well, so they did also draft T.J. Beathard in the third round that year, too. Great, great quarterback.
He
only had 12 total starts for him on that one.
Yeah.
And he also drafted a fourth-round running back in Joe Williams that never even played a down for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also which is interesting, they traded for Capri Bibbs in that draft, but he never even made it to the final roster by the start of the season. They moved a fourth round pick for him.
So I mean, they fell into George Kittle. You know, okay, not impressed. Yes. What happened in 2018?
2018. That year was a year they moved up. They moved up to get Dante Pettis. That was one of their one significant move that they had.
That didn't go well.
No.
No, that didn't go all that well at all either. Where are you at? Are you serious? There we go. Sorry. In 3 years, he only had 38 receptions, 576 yards, and 7 touchdowns for him, and he's now since been out of the league. So even that move right there, that gave him no production at all. And in that same draft, they had Tavarius Moore in the third round. He only started 13 games for him, only with the team for 4 years. And DJ Reed, in 2 years, only had 2 career starts, did nothing for them in 2 years. But since then, he's actually been pretty productive for Seattle, and I think the Jets he was with as well.
Can we summarize that by saying?
That was a bad draft as well.
Except Fred Warner.
Except for Fred Warner, yes.
Lynch. Who is a multiple-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah. They drafted a tackle in the first round who played for them for 5 years but then went to Denver and was a starter for them for multiple years. So, I don't know, like, did they re-sign him the long term? No, but I don't know if that's a complete bust at that point.
Right.
From a draft perspective, if you draft... use a high pick on a player and you don't re-sign him, I think it's a bust.
Okay, fair.
Because you're trying to use the pick. In the first and second round, you want long-term starters. That's the goal. And there's different levels of bust or whatever. Granted, I mean, there's, Chase Young level washout, or there's, Solomon Thomas level washout, which is a whole nother level of, bad.
Right. There's Montez Sweat, who, similar, not necessarily a bad player. They just traded him rather than re-signed him.
Okay. So that's so far.
Not great.
Not great. What happened in 2019?
Not great. 2019 might be one of their better years that they've had. In 2019 is where they had Nick Bosa, Deebo Samuel, Dre Greenlaw, and they were all effective starters for the team, still with the team. So, I mean, obviously we know Nick Bosa, who is an absolute stud for them right now. So, and as far as in that draft, the only significant move that they had was a move back from 104, which wound up just getting them the punter that they have right now in Mitch Wisnowski, which is only about middle of the road of punters this year, averaging about 47 yards per punt.
I don't know why anybody a punter. Why would anybody ever draft a punter?
And in the fourth round, that was kind of relatively high.
I mean, a punter in any round. Why would you ever draft a punter?
Well, I mean, if his name's Tress Way, you're going to draft him.
No, I wouldn't. I would not. I would not draft
I mean,
a punter.
As much as I love punters, I probably would almost, maybe if I, it's like a seventh round pick. I don't know.
Maybe,
I would
do at most.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the one thing I will add, though, during that 2019 season, that was the year that they did make a move, traded a third or fourth round pick for Emmanuel Sanders from Denver. And he started 9 games, had about 14 yards per reception, 3 touchdowns. And that was the year that they went through Super Bowl and lost to the Chiefs. So at least they made another the 49ers have made better in-season trades for drafts. Well, with their draft picks acquiring talent than actually draft day moves and leading up to the draft, and then making those selections with those picks. So, as we've seen so far.
But clearly, 2019 is by far their best draft.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
They found multiple, Nick Bosa. So they found, to be fair, I'm being a bit too negative. So, in 3 years, they found 5 big-time starters.
5 big-time starters. One's a borderline Hall of Famer, right? If not outright Hall of Famer already at this point.
Well, I mean, and Kittle too probably is up there.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So
you're talking about Nick
Hall
Bosa, but
yeah.
And that's 5 more than Washington's found.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but I think of this group, finding hitting on three of those guys in one draft. That is a quality draft. I gotta say.
Yeah, I'm happy when we come away with 3 good starters out of a draft after 4 years. Like, getting that level is pretty nice.
Right. Okay, 2020.
Right. 2020. So they had 2 first-round picks that year. Javon Kinlaw, who wound up being minimal in production. He only had 5 sacks, 70 tackles, started 28 of 41 games. So you can count him as a bust. He's actually off with the Jets now, currently. So he's not even with the team anymore. So that one, I'm not being a very good move at all.
No.
Now, Brandon Ayuk, they moved up in the draft 4. Mm-hmm. And that was a move where they sent. Where am I at? There we go. Brandon Ayuk. And are you serious? They moved 3 picks to go up to 25 to hit Brandon Ayuk. But they did. Picks 31, 117, and 176 get up to pick 25 for Brandon Ayuk. Sorry.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say what we've learned here is that Adam Peters or the people he worked for love trades.
Yes.
Not a little bit. Like, they're having a sensual romantic relationship with trades.
And right. What's interesting to me is it's both trading up and trading back.
Yes.
It's not like they're fixated on one versus the other.
They're like actually having like a dirty, sleazy, illicit affair with the idea of trades.
Yeah,
is that fair enough?
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, people need to be careful what they wish for and want, like, to trade back them too, because as we've seen, they don't have a very high hit rate when they make these moves like this.
And can
this
I
either.
Stop you right there?
Yeah.
What kind of stupids out there want to trade the number two overall pick in a year in which your team does not have a quarterback?
Yeah.
What? That is just it. That is stupid. Okay. I mean, for Christ's sake, take the quarterback.
Right.
People are trying to outsmart themselves. You got to try. I mean, I know there must be, you guys pay way more attention to this, like 90% more attention to this than I do, but I've seen it. And there's these people that are obsessed with, you're saying it right, Dave. I totally agree. Be careful what you wish for. You're going to want to trade back from number two. And you know, what can we do with this, blah, blah. You don't have a quarterback.
Right.
Right.
Take the only opportunity you have. See, your lights are agreeing with me. They're flashing. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's all Morse
take
code
this
for
this opportunity. That when you have a number two overall pick and grab the quarterback that you think is the second best in the draft, it is not complicated, people.
Now, there is one option of a trade back that I could see that might make a little sense for the team if the rumors of them being as high on J.J. McCarthy are where they are.
No, I'm saying for them.
I'm talking about in their perspective.
I'm saying they're wrong. That's what I'm saying. J.J. McCarthy is not a top five pick.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not close.
I'm with Steve.
I wouldn't even draft him in the first round. I think he's a second round pick. He should be. He won't be, but he should be.
I think he's Colt McCoy.
Yes.
Modern era. Yeah,
he is. That is, yeah, that's not a bad comp. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I've started to develop my comps for all these guys. That's my comp for J.J. McCarthy.
That's a pretty good one. I like that. I think I'll adopt that one.
If you want to steal it for your article, go for it.
I've already written that part of it. I'm not going back.
I think that's the first time I've heard anyone be that down on J.J. McCarthy at this point. Everything has been like, he's a top three, top four quarterback.
There's no way J.J. McCarthy is that anywhere near that. It's like these quarterbacks continually get overrated every year. You'd think people would learn.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, we're going to get into this next week, but this is not a great year for quarterbacks. There's a lot of quarterbacks, but there's not a lot of quarterbacks who belong in the top five. That's the truth. But let's keep going through Adam Peters' draft, because I like this next year best. This is my favorite year. 2021. What happened in 2021?
Because, gee, I wonder what is wrong with you if this is your favorite of his.
Oh, it's my favorite one.
Well, I mean, they moved up for a future Hall of Famer in Trey Lance. What's wrong with that?
He may be in like the Pro Bowling Hall of Fame, perhaps. He could be in, you know, maybe his high school, you know, Hall of Fame, maybe.
Oh, he'll maybe be in his, Hall of Fame.
Maybe he's in his household Hall of Fame. Like in his household, his family voted him into the family Hall of Fame, perhaps. He might get into that one. Well, he's not going to get in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Well, see, now this is where we get into the Micah Parsons scenario, though. Because in this trade back, obviously it went to the Dolphins, one of those future first-round picks. Well, that future first-round pick in 2020 draft, wound up being the 12th overall, was traded from the Dolphins to, we all know, the Cowboys.
Right.
And then that's where Micah Parsons came in. So imagine if San Francisco never even made this move. You would have had a linebacking core with Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, Micah Parsons, with that front seven, you know, and then... Wow.
You throw Bosa on that team and.
Yes.
And Chase Young. You know.
I mean, Grant, that's looking at everything with hindsight, obviously. And it's great when you see it all laid out in paper and how everything unfolded that way. But it just shows everybody that moving these draft picks around like this isn't always the best move.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a lot in favor of trading down from a high pick because, right, in my view, if you have a high pick, very high pick, like number two overall, you have an outstanding, the best chance you're going to get at getting a franchise changing player. You could go trade that pick and get four picks and get four mediocre, you know, holes. But I think one game changing, franchise changing player is worth it. That's my view of it.
Right.
I generally agree with that, unless you're in a weird situation. Like, let's say your star quarterback got hurt in week one and it just washed right. your season, you know?
Yeah, like, those weird situations, sure. But generally speaking, I think you're right. And I'm wondering, Micah Parsons is off the script here, but is there any chance the Dallas Cowboys don't franchise tag this guy?
Well, there are rumor mill nonsense about him and the Cowboys not getting along right now.
That's why I bring it up, because I saw that on somewhere. And because Dan Quinn is now the head coach of the Washington Redskins, last I checked.
Yep. And they loved each other, him and Michael Parsons. Yeah,
that's my point.
Yeah.
So, like, Dallas could franchise tag him and there'd be nothing to do.
Right.
They could put an exclusive tag on him, and no matter what Michael Parsons wants, that's the end of the story. But I think there's a greater than 0% chance that he would leave. And if he leaves, Dan Quinn might be the guy he runs to. Here. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which I would love. Yeah. I mean, despite the whole he's a cowboy thing, like,
who cares?
Yeah. He is arguably going to be the next defensive superstar for the league for the next 5 years.
That's right. And if you could both hurt your rival and improve your defense all in one fell swoop, you're going to tell me your fans are worried about he's a former Cowboy. Who cares?
No, of course not. I forgot Trey Lance is now a Cowboy too, which is also is interesting in that
this
respect.
Is why I like this year, by the way, because Trey Lance is a guy who I knew was going to be a bust. I wrote that in writing. I put it in writing, said it on the show. And not only did San Francisco draft him, they traded up to get him. Now, Dave, I know you've said you've had that column, your column, which you cited that report that said nobody knew about it and this and that. And it may be true that to say that I almost said George Lynch, the guitarist from Dokken, John Lynch, and who was it, the owner or whoever it was, made the choice and didn't tell anybody. But you can't convince me.
Kyle Shanahan.
Okay, Kyle Shanahan. You can't convince me that the scouting department hadn't reviewed him and approved of him.
Well, see, and that's why I won't fully discredit that, because you had Adam Peters, who went from head, the director of the scouting department, to assistant general manager. You know his input was very significant in there. Now, is there a possibility he might have threw a red flag up there and said, well, I don't think he's the third best quarterback in this draft. That is a possibility, but we don't know that for sure. But he definitely had an input either way on that that was significant.
You have to think that he approved him. He might not have known. They might want to kept the trade to themselves and all that. Fair enough. But they didn't write a scathing report about Trey Lance, and John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan went, screw it. Let's light this on fire. We're trading up for him anyway. That's a Dan Snyder move, and that didn't happen.
Right. Most likely. You're probably right. Yeah.
The crazy thing is, if you look back, and that was probably the last big draft class of quarterbacks where everyone was pretty excited about that class leading up to the draft. Because, you know, last year and the year before, I didn't feel that.
Right.
Lawrence, okay. Trevor Lawrence is kind of, I think, working out as promised, more or less.
He's had a difficult franchise to deal with.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what happens, right?
No, like, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, he was not in a perfect situation, and he's and still also, done pretty well.
Let's be honest. It takes guys time to learn. Like, not everyone's Patrick Mahomes or one of these guys who just shoots out of the gate as a superstar.
Well, when you had to deal year one with Urban Meyer, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's enough exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah, Urban bad coaching Meyer, situation.
What a train wreck that was.
Yeah. Wilson busted out, right? Field.
That was just a train wreck of a trade. But the other players they drafted, I mean, there's a couple decent players in here, are there not?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they got Aaron Banks, which is their starting right tackle today. Now, granted, 49ers offensive line isn't exactly a stellar unit either. I think they were ranked on the upper portion of the bottom third of the league in most categories. Mm-hmm. So, but and then they got this Diamorde Lenore in the fifth round, who wound up being a starting corner for them. Mm-hmm. And I put in the article that he had a Pro Bowl year, and he did not. When we look at it again, I don't know where I got that information. So I was incorrect on that one, but he did start all 17 games last year. Had a total of 4 interceptions in his 3-year career. Really only played 2 years, really. So I mean, he's been an effective corner. He's been good for the team. So it's for a 5th round pick. I think he's certainly played to his draft status pretty well.
Yeah. So, but you got to hold. I do hold the Trey Lance thing against him. At some level, he was involved.
And let's not forget, sure, they also drafted a Pro Bowl corner too.
They did. That's true.
Yeah.
Lenore.
Now, granted, hopefully this is one of those situations where it's a learned experience for him too. And maybe he takes that and goes, you know what, we're not going to make this move back for J.J. McCarthy because I'm not going to have another Trey Lance thing happen. I'll stay right here and take one of these quarterbacks and move on.
Oh, I don't think Trey Lance is J.J. McCarthy. I don't think J.J. McCarthy is Trey Lance. Trey Lance was going to be a train wreck.
I'm just saying moving off the second pick to go back and get J.J. McCarthy from what you're saying is a pretty significant drop off.
Right.
That's how I'm making that comparison. You know what I mean? So that's where I think you make a big mistake in this draft by doing that.
Okay. So 2022, what happened?
22. That year was a decent year. They came out with, actually, they had no first round pick with a Trey Lance move right there. And this is a year right now you have a bunch of guys that haven't done anything in the league just yet, except for Brock Purdy. This is the draft where they got Brock Purdy in the 7th round. He's pretty much saved this draft class for the most part. I do know that Nick, if I say his name right, Nick Zaljaba, well, however you say his name, he's been a more of a swing tackle, more of a interior depth guy for them. Hasn't really got any significant time, but he has been fairly productive as an offensive lineman. But outside of that, really nothing else from this draft just yet.
I mean, look, Brock Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant. Congrats on finding him, but they fell into that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think the moral of the story here, without diving too much into the dumpster of all of this, is that, as we said before, the guy loves trades. Loves trades of all type. If there's a trade, like I said, he's having an affair with it. And he's had a bunch of the team, of which he gets some credit for, mm-hmm. has had a bunch of successes, but he's also had a bunch of spectacular failures, which, newsflash, that's about like every other team, may be better because most teams cannot find multiple Pro Bowlers like he's had. So,
right,
that was years ago, but it's going to be a mixed bag.
Yeah.
You know, now our perspective as Washington people here is we've seen Disaster City for forever, you know. So if it improves from that, maybe that'll be better. But do not expect, I don't think, based on this, he's not some sort of draft savant here. He's had a ton of misses collectively, however you want to give him credit for. So it's not going to be perfect, but they'll find some. But just won't be, it's not going to be what people are probably hoping for.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, 70% of the draft choices he's been involved in have either been bad or they've been mildly decent, if at all. So, I mean, it's definitely not a guarantee. There certainly has not been this draft quiz, like you
but
said.
But that is the norm in the league.
Yeah.
Don't forget, I mean, I did 3 years ago, was it? I spent an entire month.
Yeah.
Because I had nothing to do, apparently. I did an analysis of every single draft pick for the last 20 years. And it is, most of them are busts. even in the top of round one, most of them are bust.
Right.
You know, so you can find a handful like this. That's a win, you know, but it's going to be a mixed bag and he's going to make mistakes. Some of these draft years he's involved in are going to be terrible, but the history would suggest that he's going to find some plus level players along the way.
Right. Now, if I were to add, if there was one move that I would anticipate him doing would be moving from the second round up into the first round to try to get himself a left tackle. And the one move that I pointed out in this article was moving up to 16 to Seattle, you know, and it was a type of trade where they would send their 36th, 67th, the 100th overall selection, plus a third round pick next year for Seattle's 16th overall and a 25th fourth round pick. And I came up with that draft pick evaluation chart where the total points Washington would be sending is 1,085 and Seattle 1,062. So Seattle would make out a little more in the move, but they get up and they can get themselves a left tackle that they're priming to get.
Dave's not making this up. I mean, there is, for those of you who are aware, there is a chart out there that isn't like some sort of official thing, but teams do use that.
Yes.
It's not to say they are married to it or anything, but it gives kind of a decent general sense. Like Dave didn't make this up. I mean, he did make it up, but there's a logic to what he's doing here with these picks.
There's actually multiple charts out now. There's like a classic one that was developed in the 90s, and then there's like updated ones.
The only one I've ever looked at is the one you're talking about, the old one. So
yeah. The newer ones are not as common to find, but I've seen them around. And people, I think it depends on who you're talking to, which one they want to use.
I mean, look, this is a big trade and it's a lot of assets to give up. It really is. Yeah. But they're moving up a long way. And Washington desperately needs a left tackle. I don't care what Dan Quinn or Adam Peters says. They have an emergency, like a crisis going on in their offensive line.
Frankly, they still have a big need at right tackle, too.
I know. But that's what I'm saying. There's a crisis in the offensive line. So they need to, if it were me, I would do this. Something along these lines, at least.
If a guy's still there that you think could start right away, yeah. My bigger concern is, quite honestly, there's only three, maybe four left tackles who are week one starters, and I think they'll all be gone by top 10.
Maybe. And if that's – well, I mean, you can't draft everything in the top 10. You can't draft four quarterbacks and
four tackles.
And Marvin Harrison and, you know, everybody can't go in the top 10.
I think I do think they'll all be gone fairly quickly.
We'll see.
Yeah, of course, we're getting closer to it. All right, since we're talking about the draft, do we want to just do my draft preview that I covered there? All right. So, guys, I wrote about linebackers this week as we continue to cover each position group in the draft. So the thumbnail on linebackers, it's not a great class from what every draft expert and, you know, every mock draft site you see. There's maybe a late round first rounder in this class. Most of these are like second and third round guys that I was looking at, mostly because if Washington wants somebody who's going to have an impact at linebacker, you're probably talking about these second and third round picks as the spot to do it. And despite the fact that I think the team, they picked up two starting linebackers and a depth guy, I think that they still could use another linebacker from this group. You have them sit for a year behind a Hall of Fame middle linebacker and learn how to play. And then this is a guy you have going forward after this. Like, it's actually a pretty good time for Washington to kind of draft and develop a linebacker who they think could be a potential starting middle linebacker, especially. But, you know, guys who are true middle linebackers are rarer and rarer now. So I'll just cover some names. I didn't go through and necessarily say this guy's a third round pick. This guy's like, these are all day two guys, some day three guys. I'm going to cover the ones that I was really impressed by when I started looking at, YouTube clips and everything of them. The one guy that I thought was very interesting, and I think he's probably the top rated, is Edrin Cooper out of Texas A&M. The thing about him that stood out to me, he's got great anticipation for finding the holes and the run lanes and getting himself in that right position to make a tackle on a running back from the middle. So if we're looking for a middle linebacker, traditional think like London Fletcher, what he did in his prime kind of stuff, just, you know, stopping the run. I think that guy could be a great asset for that. Last year, he had 17 tackles for losses and 8 sacks. So, like, he was very good at getting after the quarterback. Probably would also be a decent strong side linebacker. Another guy I really liked, Peyton Wilson, out of NC State. He's more of your athletic, think Jamin Davis kind of guy. He very similar athletic profile in my mind.
6'4", at Peyton Wilson at 233.
Yeah.
It's a bit thin.
Yeah, he's a bit lean. A lot of linebackers now are in that 230 range.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I mean, if you look at this chart, and you're going to get to more of these guys, I won't spoil it,
but
they're all almost exactly the same size, within an inch and about 5 pounds for each other. There's like a prototype of linebackers in the NFL now.
Right, and there's definitely the case. I mean, there are a couple guys who are going to be later round picks, guys who are more of like your 34 style linebacker these days. Outside linebacker, you know what I mean. Glorified edge rushers. You can call them linebackers. You can make them DEs.
Yeah, they're 6'5", 260. Yeah.
Yeah, you still have those, but almost all those guys now play edge. They don't play middle linebacker much anymore. In fact, one guy who I know a lot of fans have obviously highlighted because they have name recognition is Jeremiah Trotter Jr., former Redskin, former Eagle. One thing I pointed out, you might like him. He's not his father. He is 30 to 40 pounds smaller than his dad was in terms of playing weight.
Can't you just fill him up with some Five Guys burgers and turn him into
cheese steaks in his case? Cause he's a Philly guy more.
Yeah.
yeah, you could do that. but you know, like I think it kind of points to it though, despite the fact that he comes from that NFL pedigree, his dad played at 260 something and he's 228.
Yeah,
and
at least that's what he's looking at. 6'1", I mean, you've got it listed at 6'1", 260 for his dad. Yeah. That's light years bigger than
his son. Now, his dad also sucked in pass coverage because he was a big old dude who was primarily just a run stopper, if you remember.
Different game back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Although he did play the Tampa too,
right?
Even back then. Because, you know, that's what the Eagles were running back in those days.
Yeah, but the Tampa too is not the same as having basically one linebacker that's permanently kind of half a safety, half a linebacker,
right,
whatever you want to call it, you know, like Jamal used to call it what was it in Washington, but
the Buffalo nickel.
That's kind of what these guys all on this list.
That's what they're all becoming. Yeah.
Yeah. With the exception of, I don't know if I was about to say Peyton Wilson, cause he's a little bigger, but I mean, he's still athletic, running a 4.43. 40. Yeah. I mean, he fits. So all these guys kind of fit. None of these people strike me as as a prototypical middle linebacker.
I think if you're looking for more prototypical, the guy out of Michigan, Junior Colson, who's almost 240, like he'll probably get bigger as he continues to play in the NFL. That's the one thing. People obsess about weight of players a lot coming out of college. And you got to remember, we all put on more weight after 21. A lot of people, you know, that's not their final weight. So, like, I'm not too worried about it, but Colson almost 240. So that at least gets to your normal weight and prototypical linebacker size. The last one I'll really emphasize, though, that I liked is Cedric Gray out of North Carolina. To me, he was kind of like, when you watch him, he does everything decently well. Most of these guys, and if you read the article, you'll see, most of them are either going to be run stoppers or they're going to be pass guys. Not many of them have all the linebacker tools right now. But I think he kind of has the best balance of all of them, where he can do a little bit of everything for you. He can cover, he can blitz, he can play the run. You know, he's not just going to fill in one or two things that he does.
I mean, I think there's no chance that Washington spends a first or second round pick on one of these guys because
third rounders.
Yeah, none of them are. But even more than that, they just can't afford that. And they've got starting linebackers lined up for this year already. So like like you said, like a growth kind of pick somebody who they can grow into being a starter because Bobby Wagner isn't going to be around forever. You know, maybe
Bobby Wagner is probably going to only be around this year.
Right, yeah, and so they need to find somebody to replace him that they can afford to let him sit for a year at least. So yeah. Third or fourth round pick, maybe one of these guys you're talking about, I think you can expect that.
Yeah, but I also think, and I'll really emphasize this part point, Dan Quinn is about role players. Like, if you listen to his press conferences and how he talks about football, he is all about finding guys and saying, this is going to be your role in my defense to do these couple of things. And then he utilizes that. That's why he loved using the 3-4 or the 4-3 under so much, is because right. You know, you can find guys who fit that one job very easily. So I wouldn't be surprised if you do see him take a linebacker or two who fill those kind of roles.
We have a new guy on the show, by the way. I wanted to introduce Dave Earle is here. I don't, he hasn't spoken in like 15 minutes, so we thought we'd remind you he's on the show.
Well, for one, I was letting Alex run through his list right there. I was just being patient.
I can't.
He already named the one guy. Huh?
I can't just let him talk for 15 minutes. Are you kidding me?
Well,
it's absolutely fine. I don't like talking.
He named one of my top guys in Adrian Cooper.
So that's your guy?
Adrian Cooper I do like a lot, too. But the other guy that I do like a lot is Chris Boswell, linebacker out of Alabama.
Mm.
And he's at 6'3", 251 pounds. And this is probably one of your better coverage. Yeah. He's probably one of your better coverage linebackers in this draft. He is excellent. What's that?
I was saying that's rare for a big guy.
Yeah. And some of his pros are is in coverage, he has really good awareness and anticipation. I mean, he's dropping back in the zone. He's very fluent in his motion. He's quick on his bursts, and he's real quick on his first step to break into a route that he sees developing or whatnot. He could cover guys like a Dallas Goedert and even, to an extent, Travis Kelce. Not many people can, but he has the range. He has the speed and the quickness to have the ability to do that. And as far as pass rush, he's very quick off the edge. He plays very strong. But the only problem that he does have is, and the report I'm reading here is, he can tend to get a bit upright at times. So if he's going against these bigger offensive tackles, you know, if they get that reach into his chest, they can easily eliminate him. They can easily eliminate him off the rush. But as far as covered on the run, I mean, this is a guy at a 4.6 40 that I think is a guy that will sit there perfectly in that mid round. And most mock drafts have him right around roughly about pick 40. The highest I see him go was pick 36. So he was sitting right there. If Washington doesn't move up for their pick right there, pick 40. So that's a guy that I would love to see in Dan Quinn offense. He going with playing the role that you see. Michael Parsons.
The problem is Washington be negligent if they don't draft an offensive lineman.
Sure.
To me, in my view, in my opinion.
Which would be like Jordan Morgan at that point right there from Arizona.
Somebody, yeah.
Yeah. Or the kid from Houston, Paul.
Chris Paul.
Yeah. I think he would be... I actually like him more than Morgan. The more I've looked at just various, you know, clips and stuff. But we're not talking about linemen today. Anyway, that kind of covered the linebacker group. So next topic that we had, I'm going to go dealer's choice. We can talk about Rashee Rice. He now has 8 felony counts and the warrant for his arrest. We can talk about Steve's article about Jonathan Allen and will he be able to turn his career around. Or we can talk about what is really the most important story to me, of course, and that is that the NFL is going to allow a third helmet for teams.
Okay, we're not doing the last one. No. Nobody but Alex Eats cares about that. To summarize, Jonathan Allen.
Yes.
He did fall. The reason why I got to think about this is that it seemed to me that his influence and his impact on the game was less last year. And looking at his stats, they were, you know, he had, except for his rookie year when he was hurt, tackles in the 60s every season but last year. Mm-hmm. 10 tackles less last year. He had 9 sacks in 2021, 7.5 in 2022, 6 in 2019, 5.5 last year. And so what happened? And on top of that, he showed some bad attitudes along the way. You know, he was talking about not wanting to be a part of a rebuild a few months ago.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a case of Washington fans inflating this guy. He legit fits up there with some of the better, from a statistical production standpoint, he legit fits up there with some of the better defensive tackles. And in my column, I published a chart of it. He was 4th in the NFL in defensive tackles and tackles from 2017 and 2023. On a bad team, didn't get, much love as he probably should. And he was generally in that range for every stat you can imagine. So he's legit. But can he turn it around? He's not old. He's right in his prime. Physically, there's no reason why he couldn't turn it around. Just my fear with him is his attitude. If he's just done, he just really doesn't want to be a part of a rebuild, is it going to get worse for him? He's got to turn it around this year, because if he doesn't, yeah, maybe, maybe there is no return. So I think it's an interesting question. I don't think the data really tells us.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I think the age is going to start playing a factor with him at this point. Like, even though he's in his prime.
He's 29.
Yeah. He's maybe got 2 years left normally of what we consider your prime years, maybe 3.
By football standards, yeah.
And can you blame him for being burned out at this point? I can't.
I see. This is what got me. No, I don't. I mean, everybody was. Hell, I was sick of the team. I mean, you know.
We were all burned out of it.
Well, especially me. I'm more than you guys, and I still am not wild about it. But you are the team captain, one of the team captains. You're the defensive leader. You have got to put a pretty face on. You cannot get out there and have a bad attitude, because it rubs off on the people who look up to you and the people you're trying to lead. So I fault him more than others. I think he, more than other players, was responsible for the overall negative impact that the defense had last year because of his attitude. That's really what made me think about this column.
Well, see, when I see Jonathan Allen, obviously he played in Alabama, 2 national championships he was part of. Not much went wrong, so he was a vocal leader there. Everything kind of clicked. Nick Saban kept everything in order. He kind of helped keep everything in check, and nothing really crumbled around him. So he was fine. Now he comes in Washington's first year. He helps keep the locker room together. But once things really started to crumble around him, especially with De'Ron Payne on the sideline a couple of years ago when they got in that altercation, it just seems like I don't want to say he's not a good leader, but it seems like when the situations get to be as adverse as they had gotten, that he isn't built to respond properly to bring that locker room together the way that he should. Although he gave that impression he did early on, but you saw how everything kind of crumbled around him. He seemed like he lost some of the ears of the locker room, especially at that sideline ordeal with Payne. So I think when everything starts crumbling around him, he's not as an effective leader as when everything is going just right around him. And unfortunately, if you can't handle both sides, how good of a leader are you really?
Yeah, and it's kind of front runner is sort of what you're saying a little bit, So I don't disagree with you. And that's it disappointed me. Because he hadn't been like that before. Can you turn around? I genuinely, it's really hard to say. It really is. I wouldn't say 100% yes. I really wouldn't.
I mean, so much is going to depend on how he adjusts to this a new system.
Right. Yeah, that's why it's hard to see right now. We didn't even really know what system they're running.
Right.
I
mean, there's some clues based off of who they've picked, but you don't know for sure.
Yeah, I think as a general point, the fact that the team doesn't have defensive pass rush, defensive like edge rushers that they used to, puts a bit more pressure on him and Daron Payne both to produce. Mm-hmm. I'll say that much.
Oh, for sure.
Now, what kind of trade value would you think he had going to the draft? With his contract and a lot of teams up against the cap in terms of the teams he would want to go to, I don't think he would really draw that much in return and trade there, would
he? Who cares what trade team he wants to go to? Why does that matter?
Well, no, I'm just saying because the teams that would look to bring on that contract, if you're a rebuilding team and you're not close, you're not going to touch them.
Okay, so Allen has a $21.4 million cap hit this year. And if Washington traded him pre-June 1, it would cost him $12 million in dead cap. So they would save about $9 million. The team that he goes to would not have a $21 million cap it because, you know, the prorated portion of the signing bonus would stay with Washington, so it would be a little less. But next, so 2025 is the last year of his contract. $23 million next year, $6 million dead cap. You know, so if they're going to trade him, I mean, without a long-term contract in place, having had a down year, if they were going to trade him now, I mean, I don't think they're going to get a ton for him. They're going to get, what, fourth-round pick maybe? Mid-round pick
for him. Look at what Stephon Diggs got. It was practically nothing.
And yeah, a different position, but same point.
Yeah. Star player, very
more a way bigger star than Jonathan Allen is.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and what, they swapped a couple picks and got a second rounder in the future?
Right. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, I mean, fourth, fifth round pick at most.
Yeah.
Probably not worth it to trade him unless he just causes the bank becomes a big pain in the tuchus, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. I would just let it play out. Hope that Dan Quinn can kind of rejuvenate him a little. Positive energy, at least.
Now I'm going to play that Rashawn Slater card again. I keep mentioning the left tackle from the Chargers. He's 25 years old, and his fifth year comes up in 2025, which is that fifth year option would be $19 million. Then they got to do they have to either commit to a long term deal or not. The way the Chargers are against the cap, that could be an ideal situation where the Chargers could take one of the top tackles at pick five. Moose Slater for Allen and a pick, like maybe Allen at third or something like that. And then they make that swap and they shore up their defense more. They could draft the young left tackle to groom and they get a valuable pick in return as well because left tackles have a higher value than a defensive tackle. So you're still going to have to give more than Allen in return, but you shore up that left tackle side.
I think you're trying to speak this into existence.
Yeah,
absolutely. I am because I like Rashawn Slater a lot.
You've written about it. You said it twice. It's a good point. Whether or not anybody listens, who knows? But you know, in Washington, listen to this man, Washington front office people.
And you know, the Chargers don't really have. I mean, they have Puna Ford. I think is their best defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. So you know, they don't really have a whole lot going for them there, but. Yeah, I don't know. I would rather stick it out with him, if I'm being honest. Just maybe it's a little bit over loyal to guys who are drafted here, but and especially considering he and Terry and Daron Payne are still the only good players they have drafted in the last 10 years now, it seems like. It's not a great list.
There you go. And the other, real quick, Rashee Rice is a moron. What we were going to cover here, I'll just mention it. We covered the story last week about him racing a car and getting in a big accident, hurting people.
Yep.
So now there's a warrant out for his arrest. Dallas police, 8 charges, aggravated assault, 1 count of collision involving serious bodily injury, and 6 counts of collision involving injury. So the aggravated assault is the worst charge against him. That is a second degree felony. The other stuff is felony too. So he's got a whole bunch of felonies lined up against him. He'll probably plea bargain this to something lower, but I think you can, based on this, it's all the more reason why what we said last week, which is he's going to get a suspension, is going to come true. That's Rashee Rice.
And then a side note,
he's going to go do some time. He's going to do some jail time. They're not going to let him off the hook for this.
Right.
What do you think? Like a couple months kind of thing? Is that
It's hard to say, man. I mean, a lot of times it depends on the judge. Right. I don't know the Dallas County judge, criminal court judges at all. You know, it's not my world. But like the judges, unlike in the federal criminal charges, like, you know, we've seen some federal cases, the judges in federal cases are really locked in by federal sentencing guidelines. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not trying to get political here, but like, just like the Donald Trump cases, there's not a ton of leeway because the sentencing guidelines, if convicted, will line up. But in Texas state criminal cases, the judge has a huge amount of leeway. So it sort of depends on what kind of contrition they show. You know, it depends if they're going to cut, if he goes to trial, it depends on that. You know, a lot of times for celebrities, it's harder because the DA will want to get a win and they're not going to want to cave. This is an easy case. It's on video. There's, you know, unless there's a question about who was driving, they kind of got him on this. So they may not compromise very much. That'd be my guess. But you never know. You get some soft-hearted, you know, football Chiefs fan as a, you know, judge. You never know.
It is also Texas. So, you know, loving football.
Yeah, but trying to cover it's up also football
players doing stupid things is a Texas pastime.
But
used to be.
Dallas, in-city Dallas district courts have, I'm not trying to be political, but it's the truth, have a lot of Democrats in office right now, and they tend to be less, Democratic judges tend to be softer on criminal sentencing.
Mm. Sure.
So, but I think he will do time.
Okay. We'll see what he gets in the end. Mention real quick that the team is going to have both Jaden Daniels and Drake May come and do their in-person interviews this week.
I think they ought to do them together and just let them like fight it out like a battle.
Very interesting if they had them both. You know what? You would save money in some ways because they could fly in together on the same jets. I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think outside the box.
One, two, three, fight.
Yeah. Rock'em sock'em style.
Who's left standing? Dave, did you get cut off? What were you going to ask me?
I was just going to say the Rashee Rice thing was that I wonder now that's going to open Kansas City looking for a trade into wide receivers. I know they tried to inquire about McLaurin during the season from reports I had. Maybe they give a call for McLaurin again.
Possibly. So, yep.
Just a small little thing, that's all.
There's a lot of good receivers that they'll be able to draft in this draft.
Which is very true, yes.
Yeah. Like, they'll be able to get a starting receiver probably in the third round with how good this draft is. All right. That should cover us this week. I can't wait till the draft is here and we have something to really talk about. I really can't.
We can talk about flickering lights for 20 minutes if you want.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, right.
Let's move on though and say goodnight, everybody.
Bye.
So see you all next week.
Later.